The Old Testament reading is Psalm 111. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart in the company of the upright in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of honor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has gained renown by his wonderful deeds. The Lord is gracious and merciful. He provides food for those who fear him. He is ever mindful of his covenant. He has shown his people the power of his works in giving them the heritage of the nations. The works of his hands are faithful and just. All his precepts are trustworthy. They are established forever and ever to be performed with faithfulness and uprightness. He sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All those who practice it have a good understanding. His praise endures forever.
This reading's from Mark 1, verses 21 to 28. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as one of the scribes. Just then there was in the synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed, and they kept on asking one another, "What is this, a new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee. This is the word of the Lord.
In 13th century Italy, there was a small city nestled in the foothills of a great mountain. It was a city of considerable beauty, and its people were very, very proud of it. They had piazzas with wide fountains, football teams that didn't lose, restaurants with fantastic food, churches with beautiful spires and stained glass windows, and civic buildings with wonderful sculptures. And whenever anyone from this city travelled to Florence or Venice or Rome or any other place, their dress, their clothing, would stand out, because in those days people from different places wore distinctive dress. And people would say to them, "Strangers, where are you from?" And they would pull themselves up to full stature and say, "We are from Gubbio." That's the way they answered, proud, defiant. That's the way they were. Now one night, out of the woods on one side of Gubbio, out of the deep and dark woods of Gubbio, there came a shadow. The shadow moved through the streets, going up that street, prowling down that alley, until the shadow found someone, and then the shadow pounced. In the morning, the people of Gubbio found a mangled and gnawed body, the bones broken, the clothing in shreds. That was all that was left. And they gathered around the remains. Many could not look. And one man spoke in anger, "How could this happen in Gubbio?" And a reply was quick in coming. "It must have been a stranger, someone passing through our beautiful city has done this horrible thing." And everyone nodded their heads. That was most surely the answer. Nevertheless, that night, the people of Gubbio locked their doors and stayed inside, and no one left their homes to enjoy the beautiful piazzas or the fountains. No one, that is, except one woman. And in the morning, they found her body, mangled, gnawed, the bones broken, the clothing in shreds. And the people gathered around the body, and their anguished voices went back and forth. How could this happen? It must have been a stranger. And then an old woman spoke up. "I saw it. I saw it." The crowd fell silent. "It was late last night and I couldn't sleep. And I went to the window, pushed back the curtain. And there in the dim light that the moon provided, loping down the street, blood dripping from its jaws, I saw a wolf. A large, lean, grey wolf." And all through the day, that was the talk. In the piazzas, in the fields, in the shops, in the restaurants, even in the churches and homes. "There is a wolf in Gubbio." Two young men heard it, and a plan was formed. One said, "Those who kill the wolf will make a name for themselves." And the other replied, "Yes, my friend, that is true, and the people will be grateful. We have swords, don't we?" So that night, these two young men prowled the streets of Gubbio to find the wolf, but the wolf found them. And in the morning, their bodies were on the street, mangled, gnawed, the bones broken, and the clothing in shreds. And now the people of Gubbio were terrified, and they gathered in the piazza in the centre of the city, and they were shouting, their voices climbing over one another. "How could this be? This is what we must do. This is what we must do." And then a man was finally loud enough to silence the crowd, and he said, "We must bring in the soldiers. They have numbers. They have experience, and they will rid us of this wolf." But the voice of a merchant immediately countered his and said, "Never! If we bring in the army, everyone will know that there is a wolf in Gubbio, and our prestige, our commerce, our tourism will suffer." And of course, everyone recognized the wisdom of this, and they were silent. And in the silence, a small girl spoke. And she said that she'd heard there was a holy man in the neighbouring city who spoke to animals. Perhaps he could come here and speak to the wolf. And the people started laughing. A suggestion from a child! How ridiculous! An old man waited for the laughter to stop. And he said that he too had heard of a holy man who spoke to animals. And he thought it might be a good idea to see what he could do. Besides, does anyone have a better idea? So a delegation was formed and commissioned to go to the neighbouring city and find the holy man and tell him, well, what were they to tell him? Well, tell him to tell the wolf to keep the commandments, especially the commandment that says, thou shalt not kill. And somebody said, no, it's not just enough to tell the wolf what not to do. You must appeal to the best in him. Tell him to keep the great commandment that Jesus Christ talked about, to love God and neighbour. And the butcher finally said, my friends, a wolf is a wolf is a wolf. There will be no change. So tell the holy man to tell the wolf to go to another city. So the people applauded this suggestion, and they began to shout out the places where the wolf might be sent. Tell the wolf to go to Perugia. They deserve a wolf in Perugia. Or Spoleto. In Spoleto they won't even know that there's a wolf. And there was no shortage of suggestions, and most of the cities in Italy were named except Gubbio. And finally the delegation said they must be on their way and they would tell the holy man of everyone's concerns. So they left immediately. They didn't go the short way through the woods. They went the long way. When they arrived in the city of the holy man, everyone was in the noon markets, milling around in the piazza. And they asked a man if there was a holy man in this city who spoke to animals. And the man said, with no surprise, yes, yes, there is. And you'll find him on the outskirts. He and some of his friends are fixing up an old church there. And I'll take you. So the delegation from Gubbio followed the man to the edge of the city. And he pointed to a group of brown-robed men wrestling with bricks and mortar and said, look at there, the one in the middle laughing. He is the holy man. And the delegation saw a man in a soiled brown robe, and he was rather young. Actually, he was much too young to be a holy man. And worse, he was short. He was much too short to be a holy man. But they had come this far. So they approached him and told him of their tale of terror and pleaded with him to come to Gubbio and to tell the wolf to keep the commandments, especially the one that says, thou shalt not kill, and to keep Christ's great commandment of loving God and neighbour, and then to go to Perugia, because they had finally settled on Perugia. So the holy man listened and said, you go home. He would see what he could do. So the delegation left, but they didn't take the short way through the woods. They took the long way, and they arrived just as the sun was beginning to set, and they locked their doors. As the last of the sun left the sky, the holy man stood on the edge of the woods, and when there was no sun at all, he entered the woods. The floor of the forest cracked and broke under his steps. And soon he found himself deep in the heart of the woods. There was no light there. And since he couldn't see with his eyes, he simply closed them and walked forward. Finally, he stopped. He knew that if he put his hand out, he would touch the wolf. And he said, Brother Wolf. In the morning, when the people awoke and went to the piazza, they found the holy man standing by the fountain, and they quickly gathered round him and began to shout, did you tell the wolf to keep God's commandments, especially thou shalt not kill? Did you tell the wolf to keep Christ's great commandment, to love God and neighbour? Did you tell him to go to Perugia? And the people so surrounded the holy man that no one could see him, because he was too short for a holy man. So he climbed up the steps and stood on the edge of the fountain with the water springing up behind him, and he said nothing. He merely smiled. And finally, the people quieted down, and he said, "My people of Gubbio, the answer is very simple. Feed your wolf." And with that, he descended the fountain. The people parted. He walked through them and returned to his city. But the people of Gubbio were furious. They shouted at each other, "What does he mean, our wolf? This isn't our wolf. We didn't ask this wolf to come here." And all day long, on the streets and the fields and the churches and the shops and the restaurants and the homes, the people said, "What does he mean? We must feed our wolf." And at night, they all locked their doors. And that night, out of the woods, came the shadow. It prowled down this street and up that alley. It loped across a square, disappeared through an archway, and it turned into a narrower street. And suddenly, a door opened. Light streamed from the inside. It illuminated the dark street, and a hand pushed out a platter of food. The shadow came to the offering, looked up into the light with burning eyes, and ate the food. And the next night, again, the shadow came from the woods, prowled down this street, up that alley, loped across the square, disappeared through an archway, turned into a narrower street, and suddenly a door opened. Light streamed from the inside. It illuminated the dark street, and a hand pushed out a platter of food. And the shadow again came to the offering, looked up into the light with burning eyes, and ate the food. It was not long before every man, woman, and child in Gubbio had fed their wolf. Now, the people of Gubbio still travel from city to city in Italy. Their distinctive dress still draws attention to themselves, and people ask, "Strangers, we don't know and recognize your clothes. Where are you from?" And they reply simply, "We are from Gubbio." The response is quick in coming, often accompanied by a sneer. "Gubbio, we hear that you have a wolf in Gubbio." And they smile and say, "Yes, we have a wolf in Gubbio, and we feed our wolf." This is one of the first stories associated with the early ministry of St. Francis of Assisi, because that, of course, is who the holy man, the young, too short holy man in the story is. I wonder, and if it's not too scary to call something out, I wonder what image from the story sticks with you. Anybody? It's interesting that we all probably take away maybe the same thing, but there's probably lots of different things that we all take away. Whatever your image, and I'm sure that all of you would have at least one, the beauty of strange stories is that they stay with us. They continue to work on us for years and years to come. I must confess, I heard that story 20 years ago, and I thought of it when I read this passage this week, but I've looked in vain for it on the internet and various other places. And I went up to Sydney during the week, and my mother said, "Clean out that cupboard," because she wants to sell the house. And there was a box with an old cassette tape that said sermon, and I knew immediately which sermon it was. And I had to find a cassette recorder then and transcribe it. But I was quite surprised to find that the first time I'd heard it, there was a whole sermon that followed that I didn't remember at all. So if you don't remember what I say from here on in, I will not be offended, because I hope the story stays with you and continues to work on you, as it did on me. Because the people of Gubbio are only too familiar, aren't they? They're proud of their city to the point of being haughty. When something goes wrong, they blame strangers. When it becomes obvious they have a wolf, their first thought is not to acknowledge it. And then all their strategies for the holy man continue that denial. He should preach at the wolf. He should send the wolf somewhere else. The wolf is this wonderfully vague image for all the parts of ourselves and the parts of our society that we refuse to face, that we want to send somewhere else. What the holy man does contrasts with our behaviour. He calls the wolf brother and suggests that the people feed rather than fight their wolf. And though they immediately resist the idea that this is their wolf, slowly, one by one, they feed what they fear. And finally, they arrive at an identity that incorporates rather than excludes, that crosses boundaries. They come to a new understanding of themselves because, despite their initial denial, they accepted the strange strategy of the holy man. The strangeness in the story is a seed that grows into a change of awareness. The writer of Mark also chooses a strange story as Jesus' first public act of ministry. We probably feel more comfortable in Matthew, where Jesus, delivering the Sermon on the Mount, is the teacher par excellence. Or Luke, where he goes to his hometown and delivers a sermon that establishes that he will stand with the poor and the oppressed. Or John, where there is the sign of the water turning to wine. But for Mark, Jesus is the exorcist. Jesus the exorcist. What do we make of this? Exorcism stories are strange. They're spooky. Perhaps they're a bit embarrassing, a bit irrelevant in the light of all our modern understanding. But what is strange in Mark 1, 21 to 28, and perhaps we find this strange, is that it's not the exorcism that surprises. It's Jesus. He astounds the synagogue. Perhaps not even with what he's saying. The writer of Mark doesn't even tell us what he was saying. What they find astounding, shocking, strange, is that he dares to say it. Who is he anyway? He's too young, perhaps too short, too much of a nobody. But then, just then, from in the synagogue, someone who does know who Jesus is gives him a second challenge. In their synagogue, there was a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? What the hell are you, the Holy One of God, doing here?" Jesus declares and demonstrates the reign of God in the wilderness with the wild beasts at the beginning of Mark, amidst the busyness of fishing, and here in the synagogue, amongst those who think they are clean and those who think they are unclean. Just as the heavens were torn apart at Jesus' baptism, bringing heaven to earth and earth to heaven, here at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he does the same, tearing down identities that exclude, breaking through boundaries that keep us from ourselves, from each other, and from God, and declaring every place to be God's place, to be holy place. The writer of Mark deliberately tells us a strange story. For here too, the strangeness in the story is a seed that grows into a change of awareness. Perhaps it grows into a change of awareness about the reality of possession in our times, in our lives. As Walter Wink writes in Engaging the Powers, I have a nagging hunch that the gospel's power in our time is about to be manifested in a manner as repugnant to the sensibilities of the society at large and all of us who have accommodated ourselves to it, as the early Christian message was to Roman paganism. Our society is possessed, Christians as much as anyone. We are possessed by violence, possessed by sex, possessed by money, possessed by drugs. We need to recover forms of collective exorcism, as effective as was the Christian baptism, the early Christian baptism's renunciation of the devil and all his works. Perhaps this story will grow into a change of awareness about who we find God consorting with. Our world might no longer fall neatly into sheep and wolves, enemies and friends, clean and unclean. Perhaps it will grow into a change of awareness about where we might find God, that God might occupy the places and spaces in our lives where it seemed God could never go. Perhaps we find that in entertaining strangeness, we are welcoming the Holy Spirit.